From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. 17 years ago, Twinkle Chisholm produced a documentary highlighting the remarkable and poignant lives of five Utah women. One was young, one an African-American, one an avid gardener, and so on. And while their backgrounds and experiences differed, the common thread in their lives was breast cancer. Now Chisholm revisits these women to reveal how breast cancer changed their ambitions and relationships and outlook on life, and how treatment options have improved over the past two decades, but there's still no cure. Today on the program, Twinkle Chisholm on her documentary, Remembering the Faces of Breast Cancer. Plus, a Halloween primer. We hear a few ghost stories from a neighborhood near you. All that and your calls coming up after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. 1 in 100 Utah women are diagnosed with breast cancer every year, and breast cancer is the leading cause of cancer death among Utah women. And yet only 64% of Utah women get mammograms. That's nearly 10 percentage points below the national average. The statistics are sobering, but it's the stories that are especially heart-wrenching as well as inspirational. A new documentary describes how breast cancer touched the lives of five Utah women, and joining me to talk about the film and breast cancer prevention is Twinkle Chisholm. She's a Salt Lake City filmmaker, former health reporter, and owner of Lucky Dog Communications. Her documentary, Remembering the Faces of Breast Cancer, airs Monday, October 24th on KUED Channel 7. And Twinkle Chisholm joins me in studio. Twinkle, thanks so much for being here.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me.
Two of the women profiled in the film also join me. Betty Pittman is here in studio. Betty, good morning.
Good morning.
And Michelle Thomas, she joins us by phone from her home in St. George. And Michelle, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Michelle, there you are. Later on in the program, haunted houses, a few ghost stories as you prepare for Halloween. But first, breast cancer. Have you or a loved one dealt with the disease? What did you learn from your experience? 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Betty Pittman, I want to start with you. Tell us about the moment that you were diagnosed with breast cancer about 20 years ago.
It's been 21. Found out when I was taking a shower, and I was showering, and I found the lump, and I called my doctor when I went to work, and he told me to get in, and so I went in to see him, and he said, you need to have it biopsied. And I had it biopsied, and it was cancer.
What went through your mind when you heard those words, you have breast cancer?
Well, I was thinking about I was going to die in about 6 months. That was my thought at first, you know. And then Tika Beard, who was a good friend of mine, started telling me I need to get involved and do things. And that's when I started getting involved. I started, you know, doing little speeches, just talking about it, saying how scared I was and how I felt about it. And then she asked me if I wanted to go to Washington, D.C., and I told her I didn't have any money. And she said, you don't have to have any money. I'm just asking if you wanted to go. And I said, yeah, I do, and I went. And when President Bill Clinton signed October to be National Breast Cancer Month, I was in the Oval Office with him. Hmm. And that night they had a dinner at the Sheraton, and Vice President Al Gore asked us if we would like, they told all the breast cancer women to go to the right and sit over there, and he was going to dance with us, and he danced with every one of us.
Oh, my.
And we were all bawling. We were all crying. We were very emotional.
Of course. Michelle Thomas, I understand that breast cancer runs in your family, so you knew that you were at risk, but it still must have been quite a shock to hear the diagnosis for the first time.
Well, actually, I'm the youngest of eight, and I didn't know it was in my family because my older siblings got it after I did. Mm. I started off the trend, It doesn't matter. It's always a shock, and I was I had been accepted into graduate school at the U of U, and I was ecstatic. I'd moved my 11-year-old daughter, and I had moved up to Salt Lake. I'd had all my physicals before going up there because I thought I don't want to have to get involved with new medical treatments and whatnot. Had my very first mammogram before I left town, started graduate school, and my doctor called and said, you have breast cancer. And I was so shocked because to me, it was It was, are you kidding me? You mean, well, I'll just hurry and come home and have a mastectomy and come back to graduate school. Because I wanted to go to school. But I had no idea what would lie ahead. I mean, you don't have a drive-by mastectomy and go back to life. So it was shocking on a number of levels. I was 39, and I didn't have breasts, for starters. I couldn't have found a lump, and I was just so shocked. It was like, come on. I don't know. It's fingers in the electrical outlet time.
Hmm. Twinkle Chisholm, you produced your documentary Faces of Breast Cancer 17 years ago. How did you meet these women?
I was, at the time, I had left Channel 2, and I was over breast care services for the Holy Cross system. And we had an event every year called Life After Breast Cancer. And I think I pretty much met most of them through there, or somebody would say, hey, did you know about so-and-so? And they were interesting, unique stories. And I think no matter the disease is different in every woman. Her experience is different. Every man, as far as that goes, because men get breast cancer too. It's rare, but it happens. And so, I met different women and talked to a lot of women and settled on the five that I followed because I thought they each had unique stories.
It's been 17 years since that first documentary.
Yes.
You followed up now. Why now?
I don't know why KUED called and said, hey, would you? So that's more of a question for KUED, but I'm darn glad I did because it was really fun to reconnect. I mean, like Betty and some of the women that live in town, we'd run into each other every few years or, right. but it was really fun to actually spend some time with them. And it was two of the women, the original five women that I followed, did not survive the battle. And I interviewed Jerry McCoy, who's Frieda's husband. And, she died right after the documentary aired. So even though it's been like 16 years since she died, it was still very emotional for him to talk about it.
Sure. I want to play a clip from Jerry, from your documentary. This is from the documentary Remembering Faces of Breast Cancer. Before we hear Jerry's voice. Tell us a little bit about this couple, Jerry and Frieda McCoy.
Well, I called them Team McCoy because they were always together. And he went to every appointment with her, everything. And he was really the researcher. He did a lot of research so that they could get her the latest and best treatments. And she had a bone marrow transplant, and not very many people were getting that at that time for breast cancer. And they were just very much together.
In the film, they don't look very old.
No, I don't. To be honest with you, I don't know how old Frieda was. No, she wasn't. None of the women I followed. Eileen was only 23, but I mean, none of the women I followed were like up in their 70s or 80s. They were all, 30, 40 years old.
Well, let's take a listen. This is Jerry McCoy, the husband of Frieda McCoy, one of the women profiled in the documentary Faces of Breast Cancer.
Yeah, we just bring all that emotion back like it was yesterday. So it's emotionally damaging. I mean, it was 3 years before I could even get rid of anything or clothes or anything else. It just, everything had so much energy that you'd get doing something and it would just tear you apart.
That's Jerry McCoy from the film Faces of Breast Cancer. Betty Pittman, he talks about the emotional ups and downs of this disease. We hear a lot about the physical part of it, but how was it for you emotionally to go through this roller coaster?
It was very emotional for me because I did a lot of crying. I mean, I cried almost every day. And sometimes now when I think about things, I cry again. So it's very emotional because you can't never, it's always there in the back of your mind. And you think any day it might come back. You think that. And I know I'm clear, but I still think it might come back.
After all these years, Michelle, how do you think about the emotional side of breast cancer?
I relive it a great deal because there's so much breast cancer in St. George and in Washington County. And I know all my classmates, so many of my friends and family. So I cry all the time, not for me, but I know what they're going through. Well, I guess I'm crying once for them and 10 for me, to be honest with you, because I have to call them and I go, oh, please call me whenever you have one of those horrible wake up in the middle of the night moments, because I'll be there with you. You're never more than a split second away from the time you were going through it, and you just don't want anyone to go through it as you did. And I just cry for everyone. I'm pleased for people who had these wonderful husbands like Jerry. He went through it every step of the way with her. A lot of people don't, and I was kind of grateful my mom and dad weren't alive, because I don't think I could have kept my head above water and kept their head above water and my little girl's head. You know what I'm saying? It's a huge responsibility to try to pretend it's not killing you, and that you're okay, and to keep positive. You want to lock yourself up and be away from the public eye.
Michelle Thomas and Betty Pittman are with me. They are featured in the documentary Remembering the Faces of Breast Cancer, which airs on Monday. And Twinkle Chisholm is the producer of that documentary. Twinkle, I think when we think about breast cancer, it's physical, but it is a very unique place in the human body. It's got this sexual part of it. It's a functional part. It's so inherent in being a woman and femininity and attacking that part of identity. Can you talk about those features of breast cancer and, you know, why it holds this place, this kind of special place for women?
Well, I think all of what you said is true. And for some of those reasons, back 17 years ago, a lot of people didn't talk about it. And they talk about it now. And, your femininity is, you know, messed with in one way or another. It's just, I've never been through it myself, but I've been around enough people who have, and that is one of the initial reactions. You know, after, at least with most people, after they get through that, it's like, oh, God, I could lose my life, mm-hmm. you know, forget my breasts, I could lose my life. And one interesting person that's followed in the documentary is Betty Stelmacher, and she married her husband. She had both breasts removed and then was having a very complex reconstruction. She wasn't having implants. And they got married while she had no breasts. He didn't care, mm-hmm. you know. And sometimes I think sometimes men care, sometimes they don't. But, you know, women always care.
Yeah. You had a double mastectomy, Betty Pittman. Why did you choose to do that when you only had the cancer in one breast?
Well, I did it as a protection for me, because I talked to my husband about it, and he says, I love you, not your breath, you know, because that's a part of you. And I just said, okay, I'm going to have both of them removed. And when I had Dr. Hugh Hogle done my surgery, he says, are you sure this is what you want to do? And I said, yes, it is. It's what I want to do. And
so
I
no
did.
Hesitation?
No hesitation. Hmm. Just had it done and had implants, and I have saline implants.
Michelle Thomas, what was your experience in that regard? Did you have misgivings or second thoughts about removing a breast?
Not for a second. Are you kidding? The minute they said it's multifocal and we need to take the breast, and you might want to think about having the other one removed as well, precautionary, I said, can we do this one at a time? Because I can't even wrap my brain around this quite yet. But we did one, and then they went in with the big artillery, and as they do with chemo and radiation, and whoa, my sister did one, and then she had the reconstruction. I didn't even go do reconstruction. I thought, this sucker turned on me. I don't know that I want to take any chances. Everyone's different. Everyone gets that choice, and that's great. And their doctors help them make that decision. If you have a great doctor, you've got a great asset, and I did. And my doctor down here, I go once a year, and I say, "Oh, Dr. Winch, please tell me you're seeing less of it." And he says, "No, I'm sorry, I see more and more." He was a general surgeon, and 98% of his practice now is removing breasts from breast cancer. And I think that's not uplifting, so to speak. That just breaks my heart. That's his whole practice. It's too prevalent, way too prevalent.
We're talking about breast cancer with my guests, filmmaker Twinkle Chisholm, Betty Pittman, and Michelle Thomas, who were featured in the documentary Remembering the Faces of Breast Cancer. The documentary airs Monday, October 24th at 9 p.m. on KUED Channel 7. It will be followed by a panel discussion on breast cancer research and treatment options. And you can find more information on our website, kcpw.org. If you have questions or comments about treatments or ways to cope with breast cancer, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a break, but we'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Twinkle Chisholm's 1994 documentary profiled five Utah women who had been diagnosed with breast cancer. A new documentary reintroduces us to these women on how treatments and awareness have changed over time, and we invite you to join us this hour. How has breast cancer affected you or the life of a friend, a mother, a sister? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. In studio with me, filmmaker Twinkle Chisholm, also Betty Pittman and Michelle Thomas, and the documentary Remembering the Faces of Breast Cancer will air on Monday night. We'll give more details on that later in the program. I want to introduce another voice into the conversation. Twinkle, let's bring Eileen Gray into mm-hmm. this conversation. Mm-hmm. Before we hear her voice, tell us who this spunky young woman was.
Eileen was 23 years old when she was diagnosed, and she's just a great kid, great young woman, and had just graduated from BYU, was planning on going to graduate school at the university, and had spent the summer interning in Washington, D.C., and just was just really excited about what was in front of her. And because she was so young, two different doctors sent her home saying, "Oh, no, it can't be." Well, by the time she got to Dr. Hogel, the lump was so large she had to go through two courses of chemotherapy to shrink the lump before it could be removed.
It's a very advanced stage.
Yes, very.
This is the voice of Eileen Gray from the documentary Remembering Faces of Breast Cancer.
Quite honestly, I'm more concerned about my health and my life. And if I have to have a mastectomy, that's just one of the realities of breast cancer. It's a very minute trauma compared to the idea of losing one's life. It was a bit of an inconvenience.
She talks about being inconvenienced by this disease. I imagine there's never a good time, Betty Pittman, to get this diagnosis. You're in the midst of your life, and there it is.
It's not. It's scary. It's very scary because you don't know what the outcome is going to be. And I was the first in my family and the only one in my family. So you can imagine how devastating that was for me because I checked my family history. Nobody has breast cancer. Hmm. I'm the first one and the only one.
Twinkle, you developed a personal relationship with Eileen. How did you cross that line between journalists and personal friend?
Well, she was pretty much estranged from her family. Her family lived on the East Coast, and they weren't real close. And, you know, she was just a good kid, and I just couldn't help but, you know, want to help her and be a support. And another huge supporter of hers was a friend of hers, Ray Poole, who was in the original documentary. He takes her to all of her chemo classes and stuff. And when he found – they went were on the Washington, D.C. thing together. And when he found out she had breast cancer, they lived in the same apartment complex, and he rented a two-bedroom apartment and moved her in because she wasn't able to work. And so, you know, he just really was always there for her. And my girlfriend, my best friend, Tanya, and I became friends with her, and
you took her on a special trip.
Yes. One morning, Tanya said to her, if this doesn't go well, we'll take you anywhere in the world you want to go. You know, and so when it spread into her brain, I said, where do you want to go? And she said, the Rosie O'Donnell Show. And I'm like,
is that surprising?
I was shocked. I was figuring she was going to say Paris or someplace, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And fortunately, I have contacts, and I got a hold of the GM at the ABC affiliate here because it was an ABC show, and the show was sold out for years. So I told him the story, and the next day the producer called and she said, you'll have two tickets and Rosie will meet with her after. And so we had an absolutely fabulous time in New York. She really had a good time, and she met with Rosie, and Rosie was just as nice as she could be to her, and it was great. It was really, we were so happy we could do that.
That's a true gift. Twinkle Chisholm is the filmmaker behind Remembering the Faces of Breast Cancer. It will air Monday night at 9 o'clock on KUED Channel 7. I want to turn to how things have changed since your first initial film excursion into this subject and now. How has the perception evolved? How have treatments evolved? Twinkle Chisholm?
Perceptions, I think... people are much more open about it. It's not a secret like it used to be. It used to be nobody wanted to say the word breast and you didn't want to admit it. And, you know, it was like that. As far as the treatments, I think one of the biggest things is genetics. I mean, they can actually test people. Should they have chemo? Should they do this? You know, and my section of this show, the half hour documentary, doesn't deal a lot with that part because I had to make a choice I wanted to update the women, and I couldn't do it both in a half hour. So the half hour that follows it is a panel discussion. And on that panel will be physicians, genetic researchers, et cetera, for half of that half hour. And then the other half is spent on outreach and the importance of getting people out. Utah is, if not the lowest state in the nation, it's next to the lowest state in the nation of women getting their mammograms. Mm. So that's a huge issue. And so that part of the show airs at 9:30. And I don't know if it's aired as one block or if it's two blocks, but the follow-up show airs at 9:30.
Okay. Michelle Thomas, in your experience over the past 17 years, how have things changed in the way that you see people reacting to your breast cancer or the way you are approaching doctors?
Well, I was always assertive, but I'm very participatory in my medical management, and I'm big on getting tests, I stay as proactive as possible. I encourage women to do that. I think 40 actually is too old to start. I think there's too many young women, as witnessed by our cute 23-year-old. And by the way, that is so Twinkle to help take her to see Rosie O'Donnell. That's what Twinkle's like. But you can't meet women with breast cancer and feel their spirit and not want to do something and help them if you've been through it, and even if you haven't, because there's such a tender spirit about them, and they're so... But how it's changed my life, as I say, it's like taking the wide-angle lens on a camera and focusing that down to the dewdrop on a rose petal, and you just see... You treasure things differently, and that doesn't go away in 18 years. It changes your life forever, and your tenderness and sensitivity and love for people who are going through this is in you forever. You just want to embrace them in any way you can, and that hurts my heart when you say that women in Utah are not getting their mammograms. It's essential. It's life-saving, and I wish they'd start earlier, to be honest with you.
Betty Pittman, before we began the program earlier this morning, you told me 40's too old.
It is. It's too old. I think you have breath. You need to know your body. It's your body. It's not the doctor's body. It's your body. Know your body. That's what I think about it. And I think women need to have, because when they're like 14 years old, they have big boobs. So you need to start having a mammogram. Mm-hmm. And I know the doctor don't want to do it, but you need to have a mammogram.
Is there resistance from doctors, Twinkle, for younger women to go ahead and get these tests?
I don't know the answer to that. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, because of the radiation and, you know, with young women. But there's also new procedures like those thermograms or whatever that they use in Europe that are don't have the danger of the radiation. So I think there's probably other ways. I know that there's a young girl that was just honored at a Susan G. Komen event, and I think she was diagnosed at 13?
15.
Really?
Yes. That's the youngest I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just horrifying.
Hmm. Something that you touched on in your film was the downwinders and the exposure to radiation in southern Utah. Michelle Thomas, I know that you have lived this, and you say that there's a doctor there whose practice has been overrun by cancer patients at this point.
Absolutely overwhelmed. And he's, you know, if there was ever a doctor that was meant to be a breast cancer specialist and someone whose career is in breast cancer and surgery, it is he. He is the most. The man is a saint, and you know what? To have to do that for a living, you'd have to be a pretty tender Jane. And every one of his patients thinks that they're his most important patient. That's the way you want your doctor to be, because you are so tender and hurt and injured and sad and scared and. I just know so many people going through it, and their children, their young daughters now in their 30s are going through it, and of course we're always going to wonder, is this linked up? Why do we have so many mothers and daughters going through this together that grew up here? But you know, research, there's just lots of breast cancer, and the fact that it's still 1 in 8 and it's not going down, hasn't gone down in 20 years, it's still that same numeral. I wish they could figure out what's doing this. Of course, I personally will always believe there's a link to the fallout, but how does that account for it nationally being that same figure?
Hmm.
And the treatment, of course, when you've been exposed to radiation and they go, okay, now I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to treat you with radiation. You're like, no, I don't think so. It's creepy. And you have to hold perfectly still, and the tears rolled out of the side of my eyes down into my earlobes as I held perfectly still and on that radiation table. You know what? You never forget this experience. It's life changing, and I got to live, and there is survival guilt, by the way, because I go to so many services of people who didn't, and you just feel like you've got to participate in things to help others, to pay back for the opportunity that you got to live.
Michelle, listening to your story, I mean, there are so many grim aspects of this particular disease, and yet you and Betty have survived, and you've not only survived, but you've thrived. You've spoken out. You've been active in the community. Betty, what's the secret of living beyond that initial diagnosis through this horrendous treatment and beyond?
Well, for me, it's trying to help other people, because I figure I've survived this disease, so maybe I can talk and console somebody else and get them to do it. And I try to tell all women, have your mammogram. It's important. And I just, you know, and like I go and I'm supporting a lady now in my church who just got diagnosed, and I'm with her and I'm talking to her daily, encouraging her, because people need to be encouraged to know that this is not the end. It's a new beginning. And that's what I, hope for. And in my lifetime, I'm hoping that there will be no more breast cancer.
Michelle Thomas?
You know, Betty, I love you. It's so true. You can either crawl into a cave and say, I'm not going to do anything about this, I'm just going to moan, or you become some form of an activist or a participant somehow to help others. And I'll tell you what, it's a much more positive way to deal with it, to get in, join the line where you help others. I've become an activist about it, and I didn't, that's not anything I really wanted to do. I just wanted to teach English. But it changes you, and I will always want to be an advocate and an educator and an assistant to people who get this diagnosis. It's just, it's nature now.
Twinkle Chisholm, is the message getting out? We see, you know, the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure, and there's just a field of pink shirts. So, yes, we're talking about it, but what more needs to be done in terms of prevention?
There is no replacement for early detection, period. You know, I mean, early detection is the key. And you know, the message, and I know I probably sound like a broken record, but get your mammograms. I mean, if you don't, you know, that there just is no replacement for early detection.
What's holding people back, do you think?
You know, they're busy. You know, our Utah families have lots of kids. Women are busy. You know, oh, it's not going to happen to me, kind of thing. And then, you know, a lot of times if they wait and then they find the lump themselves, and it, you know, it may be too late and it's spread. But it's, that is my one message, is for women to get their mammograms, do their breast self-exams, and be diligent about it. Because you, if you think, oh, I've got to take care of my kids, well, you can't take care of your kids if you're sick or you're not here.
Hmm. And so that's your takeaway message for this entire project.
Mm-hmm.
Twinkle Chisholm, she is the filmmaker behind the documentary Remembering the Faces of Breast Cancer. It airs Monday night, October 24th at 9 on KUED Channel 7. And there will be a panel discussion following the documentary on breast cancer research and treatment options. You can find more information on our website, kcpw.org. Twinkle Chisholm, thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you.
Also with us is Betty Pittman and Michelle Thomas. Michelle joining us from St. George. Michelle, thanks for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Jennifer.
And Betty Pittman, thanks for you. I'm glad you could come in today.
Thank you.
City Views continues after a break. This is City Views on KCPW. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce, and this is City Views. It's October. Tales of ghosts and unexplained apparitions spark imaginations during this month and send shivers up one's spine. Joining us now to talk about some of Utah's more famous phantoms is Julie Barneson. She's with us here in studio. Julie, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm blanking on your name. I'm sorry.
Laurie Allen,
manager of Ghost Tours in Ogden and an active member of the Utah Storytelling Guild. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having us. We love to talk about ghosts.
If you've got any questions or comments or ghost stories of your own, feel free to give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. Or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. How did you get in the ghost story business? I guess I'll start with you, Julie Barneson.
Well, I'm a professional storyteller, and I have been for 6 years, but I have always loved ghost stories ever since I was a little girl. And I tell ghost stories all the time, just as a professionally. So when they had auditions a couple of years ago, I had to try out. My first experience was actually attending the ghost tours, and I loved it so much that when the chance came, I knew I had to do it.
So this is a business. It's called Ghost Tours or Story Tours.
Story Tours, yes.
And it circulates in Salt Lake City as well as in Ogden, finding these haunted places that,
yes,
you know, that are in our communities. Tell us why we love a scary story. Why do we love a scary story? What is it about the ghost story that is so appealing?
I think it's just the unknown, the fact that something happens that nobody can explain. I've done a lot of the interviewing to get the stories, and people that don't have ghost stories down in Ogden say, but I wish I did. Mm. It's just that excitement of, ooh, creepy, unknown kind of stuff, but not real threatening. The ghost stories haven't been real threatening.
I also think it's fun to get the shivers.
It is kind of fun. Well, Julie, tell us, what is the secret to telling a good ghost story?
I think, really, that to tell a good ghost story, you need to actually be quiet. You need to build your suspense slowly. You need to lower your voice. You need to slow down and kind of raise the hairs on the back of the neck, as opposed to, you know, being too loud and sudden. And you need to build it carefully so that the shivers grow and gets that tingle up your spine.
Lori Allen, what's in your bag of tricks?
It's the mood. You have to get the mood. And since I tell in Ogden, Ogden has a lot of mood anyway. We're down 25th Street in Ogden, and that street is full of the old buildings and some nefarious history, and so the mood is there. And that's what's fun, is to get that going so that people are just there with you.
Mm. You mentioned 25th Street in Ogden. I know that ghost tours in Salt Lake concentrate on the city cemetery and the Rio Grande building.
Exactly.
And a lot of old places. What is it about the urban environment that invites these ghost stories? Why not, you know, suburbia?
I think that there are ghosts in suburbia as well, but downtown Salt Lake has so much history in the older buildings and so much happens that things stick around.
Okay, well, we're speaking with Julie Barnson and Lori Allen, both associated with story tours, ghost tours in Ogden and in Salt Lake City. And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. So, Julie, let's start with you. What is your favorite ghost story from Salt Lake City?
I love the story of the Purple Lady.
Okay, tell us about the Purple Lady.
She haunts the bathroom of the Denver Rio Grande. And the way the story goes, the train station, it was built in 1910. And it was a very hot spot for people to travel to get to various parts of the country. And as the story goes, she was there waiting on the train station. She had a purple dress on, and she was waiting for a boyfriend. And he came, and things did not go very well. They started to argue. And she took off her ring and returned it to him. And he, in a fit of anger, threw the ring onto the railroad tracks. And she went after it and was hit by a train and killed. Mm. And now her spirit is there at the Historical Society, and they say that she haunts the women's bathroom, that all of the toilets will suddenly flush or all of the sinks will suddenly turn on. And they have quite a bit of activity there in the building.
Have there been sightings of the woman in the purple dress?
Actually, yes, there have. There have been some stories of, you know, women who have looked up in the mirror and have seen a lady in a purple dress right behind them, or just, you know, wandering through and seeing a lady in a purple dress just out of the corner of their eye, but when they look again, she's not there.
You work up in Ogden, Lori.
Yes.
Tell us your favorite story from the Ogden area.
Well, I have to say probably my favorite haunted place is the Ben Lomond Hotel.
Okay.
And it has so many stories, but Maisie Eccles was married to Mariner Eccles, and they lived in the Ben Lomond Hotel.
Is this on 25th?
It is the edge of 25th Street and Washington Boulevard.
Okay.
So it's kind of the end of the street. And after they divorced, Maisie stayed there, and she stayed there till she died. And she hasn't quite left. She just loves that building. And as they were doing some refurbishing on that building, a man that was working on the woodwork looked up, and he saw this woman come out of the elevator in this old-fashioned dress. And she went up and said, oh, thank you for working on this, making it so nice. And he looked up to thank her, and she had disappeared. But she's been seen down the main staircase. What was interesting is I was telling a story at the bottom of the staircase one year, and somebody on camera got Maisie Eccles coming down the stairs. We couldn't see her with our eyes, but she was very clear on camera. So that's one of my very favorites. She just shows up in that hotel where she always loved to be.
We're speaking today with Lori Allen. She's the manager of Ghost Tours in Ogden, an active member of the Utah Storytelling Guild. Also with us, Julie Barneson, who is with the Story Tours here in Salt Lake City. And how do you find a spooky place? Is it just word of mouth, or how do these legends build? Julie Barneson.
Actually, it's a little bit of everything. You have just story, word of mouth. People talk about events. People will tell us, oh, I had this happen, and we pay attention. I know that Kristen Clay, who is the founder of the Story Tours, she has a big knack for being able to go by a building and say, oh, I bet there's a story here. Mm. And she's done a lot of the research on the stories that we have in Salt Lake.
What about you, Lori? I mean, how do you hear about new spooky places?
Well, we have it kind of easy in Ogden because of 25th Street. We go other places, and some of that is word of mouth also. There's a lot of traditions and legends, and you go to the place and ask the people. But on 25th Street, I just go up and down the street, and I've gone into every building and just asked them, have they had paranormal experiences?
What's the reaction when you go into a building and they say, oh, by the way, do you have any ghosts here?
Do you know, I thought people would look at me like I had three heads, and actually they go, yes, let me tell you, or no, but so-and-so does. And sometimes they've called up somebody else and made an appointment for me to go and talk with somebody else who's had a paranormal experience. And what I do find on 25th Street, too, is the people that say, no, there's nothing in my building. The next owner, manager moves in, and they've had experiences. So really, people in Ogden, they love their ghosts in Ogden, so they're pretty accepting.
Give us another story from Ogden, another ghost tale.
Okay, well, Madame Belle London was one of the more infamous madams on 25th Street, and she owned at one time a lot of the buildings there. Well, she did not like Prohibition, and root beer was particularly offensive to her. So in this one building that was one of her favorites, apparently she used to get up in the upper story and throw barrels of root beer onto the street so they would crash onto the street. So the man who owns that building right now and works there says it's called Union Station Fermentation, and he has flavorings for different beers and for sodas and things. He says his root beer extract keeps getting moved. And he will come in, and all of his flavorings will be in place, and the root beer extract will be someplace else. He said it's never broken. It's just some out-of-the-way place. And he has moved the extract several different times, and no matter where he moves them, only the root beer extract has been messed with. So apparently, Belle is still influencing that building, and she still hates root beer.
I have never heard of that story. That is a great story. Will you share another story from Salt Lake City, Julie?
The Masonic Temple has the ghost of Charlie Valentine. He was very prominent with the Masons in the 1920s. And when he died, he'd spent so much time at the lodge and at the temple that his wife had him cremated and sent the ashes there to the temple to stay. And over the years, that got shuffled off into a storage room somewhere. But there was lots of ghostly activity, lights flickering, furniture moving, so much so that when the night watchman would hear things, they would call the police and the police wouldn't respond because they knew it was just Charlie. They finally found the ashes in a storage room and wondered, did Charlie ever have a proper funeral? And it turns out he never did, and he was never properly buried anywhere. So they took the ashes and they buried him at the Olivet Cemetery. And everything was quiet, no ghostly activity for 8 full months, when suddenly the elevator froze, light started coming out of the elevator, and then it suddenly started working again, but the ghostly activity was back. Charlie Valentine found his way back to the temple.
He missed his old haunting place. When you think of a ghost story, so many of them are associated with some grisly act. I mean, you know, something that was just really tragic in real life. This story shows more of a fun-loving ghost.
I think so. I think he had fun. He really loved the place that he had spent most of his time in, and so he decided that he was going to stay.
We're speaking with Julie Barneson and Lori Allen, part of the Ghost Tours. The Story Tours company provides ghost tours in Salt Lake City and Ogden. And the way I'm hearing you tell these stories, it seems to me that you believe in ghosts. Do you believe in ghosts, Lori Allen?
I definitely believe in ghosts. I have some ghost stories in my own family, so I've never had a problem believing in ghost stories. If I had had a problem, I have done enough interviewing with enough people that it would have convinced me. They can't all be making those stories up. There's too many stories, too many unexplained things. Call them ghosts, call them what you want, but there's just too many things that I can't explain.
Hmm. And Julie?
I'm not so sure. I love a good ghost story, and sure, for me it never mattered whether they were true or not. But since starting the tours and running the tours, I've had some strange things happen. That
like
has
what?
Me...
You can't say that and not tell
us.
Well, I actually saw something at the Masonic Temple when I was telling the story of Charlie Valentine. Frequently the lights will flicker above the doors as we tell the story, and we say, "Ooh, that's Charlie." And okay, flickering lights, that's something. But as I was telling the story, it was only my second tour. And as the bus was pulling away, I saw on the ground floor the outline of a person in the doorway there on the ground floor. It was darker on the outside and getting lighter toward the inside. And it looked flat, almost like somebody had pasted a figure up against the door. No features, no clothes, nothing. But I honestly couldn't explain what it was that I was seeing. My mind completely blanked out. I wasn't even a good tour guide to point out to say, does anybody else see that? I continued with my story. And when we got off at the Salt Lake City Cemetery, a bunch of people cornered me and said, what was that at the Masonic Temple? And I cannot explain it.
So you were freaked out a little bit yourself.
Yeah, I was.
Have you run into any apparitions on your tours, Lori Ellen?
I have not run into any personally, but I have seen a lot on camera. Like I said, when I was at the bottom of the Ben Lomond steps, and I saw on that man's digital camera a perfect view of a woman coming down the stairs that I was standing on the bottom of. And I was in a home where they had the infrared cameras, and we saw some orbs and some different activities and things on the camera. So with my eyes, I don't, but on camera I have, and they're just slightly unexplainable.
You must share another story from Ogden. Tell us, Lori. Tell us another ghost story.
Well, we have another story in the Ben Lomond Hotel. There was a woman who came there, and her son had been injured in the war. And she had come there from out of state, booked a room, stayed there to go see her son in the hospital. She was never able to find him in the hospital. Something had happened with the bureaucracy, and she ended up dying in the hotel just of a broken heart. She never saw him again. So people that stay in that room said that they've seen a woman at the foot of the bed, just kind of standing there. And they feel like it's a protective presence. They don't feel that it's harmful. And then in the mirror in that room, they have seen a young man in a military uniform reflected in that mirror.
Cemeteries. You mentioned Salt Lake City Cemetery, which has lots of stories. Maybe pick a favorite to share with us this morning.
Our favorite story is, of course, the story of Emo's Grave.
Of course.
And that's the one that's a big, fun place, and all the kids tell the story that if you go to Emo's Grave and light the candle and walk it around three times backwards, you'll see his face there in the grating. But we don't know exactly why he's known as Emo, because his name was Jakob Moritz, and he was very prominent in his day in Salt Lake City. He actually ran for office, and he ran against a friend of his, Simon Bamberger, and he lost very badly. When he died, he had his ashes buried there in a nice vault, and everything was fine until Simon Bamberger also died and was buried directly across from Jakob Moritz. And that is when the ghostly activity supposedly started, because enemies in life are right across from each other in death.
This must be a very busy time of year for you. Do people still flock to the ghost tours? And what are they looking for when they come? Lori Ellen?
They like true stories. They like the fact that we have true stories, and they want the chill. And whether you believe in ghosts or not, a good ghost story is always a fun thing. But I've noticed that in Ogden, where the business owners are so excited to share their stories, sometimes when they see me on the sidewalk, I'm known as the ghost lady now on 25th Street, they will come out and they will wait till I'm done and they will say, oh, let me tell you, I believe everything she says because this has happened to me. And I think that's what our patrons love the most, is hearing some of those stories from the people that they've happened to.
And your patrons,
I think,
Julie?
That they're coming just to have a great spooky experience. And it's fun in, and they come away with just a little bit of a shiver and learning a whole lot of history on top of it and just generally having a spooky good time.
Julie Barnson, Lori Allen, both with the Ghost Tours, Story Tours here in Salt Lake City as well as in Ogden. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
City Views is a production of KCPW News with help from Eric Ray and Jesse Ellis. Ryan Cron composed our theme music, and you can continue the discussion online at kcpw.org. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Next time, it's Politics Up Close with Jeff Robinson. You can tune in for that tomorrow. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.